you looking for solid answers on why our healthcare system is so jacked up? Tired of the soft talk and ready to get real? Then turn up the volume and tune into smashithealthcare.com, where real, serious medical advisors are discussing how to save our healthcare system.
Get ready to get smashed. Welcome back, Smashers. What's going on? Listen, don't forget to visit smashithealthcare.com. We're so happy to have you guys back on the show today. We've got some interesting topics. I got Johnny B and Danny from Soho, and my name is Bob Salvat, and we are ready to be serious medical advisors about saving healthcare. Listen, we got some great guests coming up in the future here in the show, and we just want you to keep tuning in. Like us on social media. Send us a tweet, send us an email. If you got any great topics, we want to hear about it. But I'm stoked about today's show, John, because we're going to talk about, right, why we think some medical device manufacturers do better than others. What's the difference? What if you could think, John, we're not going to necessarily, you know, name any names of companies or anything like that, but we're going to cover the general topics, right, John? What general topics do you want to cover with regards to these medical device manufacturers?
Well, first of all, I think don't you have to delineate between, you know, the scale and the timeline, right? I mean, obviously, Motorola's pretty big deal because they've been around for a long, long time. So I think you got to look at some of the timeline stuff and say, all right, all things being equal. So I think today we're podcasting about all things being equal. Why is one company finding success and their competitor is stagnated, you know, or treading water? And I think if we start to look at the variability of that, it's kind of interesting. I think our listeners will take a little bit of solace from the fact that capitalism is very much alive and well in the medical space.
I think it's the trade shows. I think if you have a bigger, better display at a trade show and you've got an insane amount of people around your booth and you have just, you know,
a color scheme
and 40 inch screen, you know, flat screen TVs,
no,
it's color scheme, popping LEDs everywhere. I mean, come on, John, isn't that it? I mean,
no. Scientists have proven that the blue color scheme companies do better than the green, and the green do better than the red, and the red do better than the black. I mean, everybody knows that.
Really?
It's just color scheme. Colors.
Holy smokes. It's the freaking colors. I thought it was something. I don't, I was wondering why the hell they got all these flashing lights at a big trade show for med device, right?
I'll throw a serious one at you.
Okay.
People.
People. All right.
People. Widgets.
Okay.
Impetus.
Excuse me?
Mission.
This is a non-explicit show, John.
What's the impetus of the leadership of the company, right? So everybody loves to say, oh, the CEO doesn't matter. You know, his administration doesn't matter. I mean, blah, 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 blah. I mean, these companies are so big, too big to fail. I mean, there's a lot of craziness that happens. Let me tell you something. The most important guy or gal in any company is the CEO. Number one, they are a person. He or she is a person. And that person dictates goals, mission, tempo, risk assessment, what the ROI is going to be and the scale it's going to be achieved, who that person is surrounded by, and what all of their missions are. Think about that. That's a big role, right? Impetus. We are going to be the fastest growing from a revenue standpoint, from a top line standpoint, from a bottom line standpoint. So what's the impetus of the company? Yeah, I think it's important. And by the way, my first one's people. I had a boss one time tell me, give me the best people and versus the best widget. Best people always win. They always win.
You know, I'm glad you brought up people because I'll tell you what, the type of people that you see working, you know, today versus what we had 10, 15 years ago, as far as motivation is concerned, excitement about the product, you know, the ability to, you know, be in relationship with your customer and sales and that whole bit, it hasn't necessarily gotten better. It's changed. right? Would you agree with that?
It's definitely changed.
I mean, there's no question it's changed.
Why do you think it's changed?
Less depth, right? I mean, just from a generality standpoint, less depth.
Right. But the customers, listen, to be fair, the customer's changing too, right? So, you know, who's your customer? If you're a medical device manufacturer, your customer are the people that you serve, right? They're by and large, it's going to be the surgeons, right? It's going to be their patients, right? So you got physicians and their patients, and then you have the people at the hospitals and the people at the different facilities that you work with. And, you know, they're a customer also, right? You got to maintain relationships with them. So if you were, you know, back in the day, you'd listen to Zig Ziglar, you listen to some of these other guys and, you know, ABC always be closing and, you know, you got to really, you know, but some of these, you know, up and coming, you know, medical device reps and, you know, agents in the field and whatnot. I mean, they've never really, you know, some of them have never been sold anything, right? Because, you know, what do? I mean, you go online, you buy what you want to buy, right? You look at your customer reviews, maybe you're getting sold through that kind of, but they've never really, you know, been sold anything. Now, you could say the innate human behaviors, we've all sold something, right? You grow up being a kid and you sell your parents on getting you a toy or getting some candy at the store or something to that effect. So they understand it, but you know, sales is something that really has to be practiced. And it's not just, you know, I was having this conversation with my wife the other day, right? Sales isn't just about me selling you something in return for something. Sales is about relationship. It's about experience and you know, and really just, you know, doing a deep dive and willing to give a little bit more to the situation than give me your money for this, right? So why are we, you know, do you think it's all the devices that we're using? Do you think it's the you know, we're texting more than we're talking to each other? I mean, I think all these things got to play a role, right? In the whole people situation, right? So how, if that's the case, in your opinion, John, right? How does management work with that? What do you do?
From an operational standpoint, I think it's a nightmare, but from a psychological standpoint, I think it's kind of straightforward, right? I mean, if you take an individual, a person with a high self-awareness IQ, and they have a mix of a really high IQ in terms of the environment they're in, how to read the room. I mean, I think that's kind of the foundation for someone that's going to be successful. You know, good salespeople are made, they're not born, right? Great relationship builders, they're kind of born.
Yeah,
right.
I agree with that.
And I think that is their skills are honed in their environment, right? How they're brought up, types of people they hang around with, what kind of mentality they have, the things they like, the things they dislike. You know, the interesting thing is, you show me a great salesperson, I'll show you a terrible consumer. I've never met a great salesperson that's a great consumer. And the reason I bring that up is because there's no confluence of understanding, right? I don't look at myself and say, hey, this is how I consume, so this is how I'm going to sell. No, got nothing to do with me, right? Because I'm never selling me. I look at the room and I say, hey, this is a room of cardiologists. They're all men, maybe. They love college sports. All right. I got my pillars. I'm reading the room and, I'm going to throw this at them. I'm going to build a relationship this way. The other thing is that, you know, a lot of times success is for the person who just keeps showing up, right? Follow up, ask for the business, a follow up, become more likable. And if I'm in operations for a medical device company, how do I quantify that? That's a tough one.
Yeah. So you're using your strengths, you're pulling on your strengths, but your strengths are also honed because of your experience, right? And you see a lot of these companies now that instead of doing an IQ test or something to that effect, they're doing, you know, EQ tests, the emotional quotient, right? And they're really getting big into that because, you know, it's about experience and your ability to flex those, you know, emotional muscles and build relationship. You don't want to just sympathize anymore. You want to try to empathize a little bit more, right?
Yeah.
So So I think, you know, definitely top of the list on why some medical device manufacturers may do better than others is talent, human resource management, being able to go out and find not just any talent, the right talent, right? Look, if this was a professional football team or if this was a professional soccer team, right, we'd be looking at one single variable that I don't think a lot of corporations look at, and that is chemistry. Mm-hmm. You know, you play FIFA, the soccer game, and you actually, Danny, you play FIFA a lot, right? There's actually a grade for chemistry of the team. So you select all these different players, and then they grade you on how well that chemistry is. So you can't just get like every single, you know, best player in all of FIFA and put them together and expect a real high chemistry ratio, right? Is that right, Danny? Danny from Soho.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, that's correct. Thank you, Danny. So I think corporations and human resource management teams, they really got to look at the chemistry factor on some of these people. Now, that's internal people working in the office, right?
Yep.
Because your agents in the field might be a little bit different, right? They don't always necessarily work together as a team. A lot of these companies, John, as you know, they use distributors that are not direct employees of the companies. Now, in your opinion, do you think the companies that use direct employees as distributors do better or worse than the companies who don't?
That's a great question. I think that's a question that's probably been asked in almost every medical device boardroom out there. And I think the answer is the answer is a quotient that includes scale, right? And scale is a time and a financial kind of variable. You know, if you're a large company, if you're $1 billion plus company in terms of revenue, then I think it does make more sense to start looking at direct employees, right? Because it gives you a little bit more control, it gives you a little bit more flexibility on how you can kind of run your organization. But if you're starting out, I mean, your sales is oftentimes half of your cost, you know? So when you're little, you know, you almost don't have the luxury of saying, all right, well, we're going to hire 50 employees to run sales for us.
You got to cover the most prominent markets, right?
If you
want to fight in chance.
Absolutely.
Right.
So, I mean, it's that question is, that's a tough one.
So if you're small, you're mid-sized, probably not. The bigger ones, they get to do that. So they can control it a little bit better. But, you know, it's just it's a wacky world out there.
It is a wacky world.
You know, I think the agents who work with the small to mid-size that have a less of a direct relationship, their life is a lot different, right? When you're a direct corporate, it's not always an easy life. I mean, it really depends on the culture within the organization, but there's a high level of accountability, I think, that's there versus what you get from your small mom and pop non-exclusive distributors, right? The small mom and pop non-exclusive distributors, they do have accountability, but they're not bogging their agents down with a lot of paperwork. Would you agree?
Correct. You got hunters, you give them a gun and cut them loose.
Right. Right. So it's definitely a different ball game. Now, I think now when it comes to the widget, which is next on the list that you so generously gave us here, right?
Yeah.
What about technology, innovation, and the ability to innovate? Okay. Why do some medical device manufacturers do better than others in this area?
Yeah.
I have seen where some of these bigs, right? It's almost like they hit this phase in the cycle where they just stop innovating. And what they do is they go after maybe some of these smaller ones, right, who have been successful in raising money and they have a little bit of sales under their belt. And then they go and they try to acquire them because, you know, they're just not innovating internally. But right. Why do you think some of these big companies, they don't troll their own patents, they don't innovate? What's the deal with that?
Yeah, so I think I think what you just said, I was thinking about this the other day, the shift in paper usage in the last 10 years has been probably one of the most striking examples of technology that you can just draw a straight line to. I don't use paper anymore. I don't get bills anymore.
There's still a lumber shortage, right?
Correct. But I don't think it's because I do or don't get paper receipt of my bills anymore. My point is this. I think that companies get so caught up in redefining their outward facing technology that they forget about the inward facing technology of efficiency, data crunching, the AI of understanding their business at a deeper level, right? And some of the best companies out there are finally starting to say, you know what? If we understand ourselves better and we create more efficiencies internally, our outward-facing technologies will shine even greater. And we will become easier to do business with, and we will create efficiencies for our customers. We will create the best experience that we can create if we get ourselves right, if we get our data right.
So what you're saying, John, to sum it up, is if you improve your innie, you got a better Audi.
You said it, not me. Okay.
Good. I like that. I think Audis are kind of gross, but hey, listen.
I think they're all kind of gross.
Yeah. If you've got a great innie, you're definitely going to have a great Audi, right? So yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think that if you're improving, what you're doing internally to a level where you're let's say you're adopting new technology internally, right? You're utilizing what you have in your resources internally to improve your outward efficiencies. That's great, but I still see a lack of innovation with some of these big companies in such a big way. Why aren't they able to get a better handle on this? And then what I see also, and I see in the industry, is that there's less and less smaller companies, and I'm talking versus 15 years ago, coming out with new technology that's truly innovative, like outside of the box kind of innovation, like, wow, that is going to change some things. That is going to rock. Why are we moving at a slower pace now than we kind of ever have before with some of these outward technologies?
Uncertainty, clearly. Uncertainty. It's not lassoable. You can't throw a lasso around uncertainty because there's so many factors that come into play. But uncertainty is why. It clearly is why. You don't chase top line when you're really nervous about back line or bottom line. If you can withstand the storm, right? If you're making money at X, you don't chase X times Y when there's uncertainty. What you do is you protect X and you start cleaning up some of the things internally, and you just let the outside world kind of manage itself. You let it take care of itself. You don't really chase anything, right? And you quantify your weaknesses. How companies are run when they are uncertain about their environment is contrary to growth and to technology. It's just contrary.
Yeah, I agree.
And yet that's where we're at.
Yeah, I've seen some really big companies that are just, it's sad. It really is sad. Their level of uncertainty, like you're saying, and their inability to spend cash in the right places, and then just their overall negligence with innovation and technology is just on a level of scary. I think we also get a little complacent too. I think you think that you've created the best thing out there already, and you're just going to settle in with that. And if you see somebody else start to make a run and get a competitive advantage somehow, then you just go out and you just acquire that guy.
Yeah,
it seems like that's the new strategy, and that's. Yeah. A consistent strategy. I feel bad because You know, we go back to our last podcast, and Smashers, if you didn't listen to the last podcast or last show, we talked about vendor capitated pricing and capitated vendor programs, especially within these GPOs, and making it really hard for a vendor to compete in some of these spaces. So you have these big companies that are doing really well with competing within these GPOs, right? So they're the ones making money. And then you have these small to mid-sized, you know, medical device suppliers, and they're kind of scrounging for the leftovers. They're working some of the ambulatory surgery centers, and they're able to get some things going there. But now their ability to feed the innovation machine, right, is suffering. Right. And it's suffering big time. So what ends up happening is these big companies have fewer and fewer smaller companies that they can go ahead and cannibalize, and that they can bring in, you know, to the fold and develop. So we end up in this conundrum, right? We end up in this big freaking conundrum. And so what happens now is you have to look at leaders, right? Mm-hmm. Going back to what's next on your list and revisiting this a little bit, who have a better or different attitude or impetus about these things, right? What is their mission, right? And are they really willing to gamble a little bit, put it on the line, and to be differentiating, right? And that's part of our slogan, right? Is to think differently, right? And can they think differently about doing some drastic changes so that they can make a shift in technology and put more eyes on their brand than others, right? And there are a couple of companies trying to do that now, right? So what are your thoughts on that? What is a great mission, you know, the great impetus of some of your experiences, John? What does that look like?
Well, marketers build walls, right? They build walls to keep people in and to gather people, and the more you can build walls around your technology, the greater chance you'll have for pull through, right? You're trying to create a scenario. You're trying to create an environment of pull through. And it's funny, you know, the companies that are dogmatic about their marketing ideas, pretty bold, right? And, you know, 'cause it cuts both ways, you know, that wall can keep somebody out just as well as it can keep somebody in. And, but you can see the companies that are out there that have, and you can't even call it a niche, because sometimes it's much, much greater than a niche. Sometimes they have a carved out section of the market and it doesn't move. Sometimes it blips up, but it never really blips down. Right. And that's the environment you're talking about. So, you take your marketeers and you say, we're going to create efficiencies, and we're going to create a world of symmetry inside these walls. And then once we get, you know, once everybody starts grazing our way, we're going to build the walls higher, and we'll obsolete our own stuff a little bit as we see a fit, but we're never going to, we don't need to move the market. But everybody, you know, the little companies that are trying to come in and, you know, put their flag down, they have to move the market. They have to move it a little bit. They have to continuously move it, right? The timing of how they move it is important to the overall success of their company. Bigs beware of the small, you know, tiger that's got the innovation and internally in their house, they've got stuff figured out. And I'll keep it PG because it's the word needed to be stronger there. But if you got a small player that's got a keen eye on technology and efficiency, and they've got their stuff together in house, look out. Because they're going to move the
analyzers, right?
Yeah, they're going to move the market.
Yeah, the analyzers, you know, data and analytics now especially is huge, right? And I think, you know, even going back and touching on the human resource management piece, you know, data analytics on people, right? It versus, you know, data and analytics on you know, technology, and being able to really hone in on what the customer wants, and looking at the feedback, surveying the land, surveying your more profitable zones, if you will, over the United States or even internationally, on where you're going to break into market, where you're going to allocate most of your marketing dollars, and what's going on with that, right? So there is no secret, you know, that the Smash It Healthcare, you know, campaign is, you know, we're talking about thinking differently. We're talking about you know, what does it look like for medical device suppliers, right, to think differently about how they sell their products, and what does it look like for the buyers out there, the buyers and the stakeholders of those supply chains that need to really think differently about how they look at data, how they look at analytics, how they look at what their customers are saying, what is the general population of customers out there? What do they really want and why? I think that's one variable that's really hard to tell, right? So if you're stuck in a little corner of the market, right? Let's say you're off in a little part of Washington, and you're not really seeing what, you know, the rest of the country is really doing because you don't have the data and analytics to really get that kind of information on what the trends are and what your customers are doing, right? Because you're stuck in your foxhole, right? So from a buying standpoint, it's very hard for that individual to think differently. They're laser focused on the small sphere around them, and they're not really able to plan for what's around the corner. Then the medical device manufacturers come in and they deliver the news. Listen, this is where the market is going. This is what we're training your physicians on, and this is what's happening. And now we got to get product approval on this, and we got to do this, and we got to do that. And the next thing you know, these buyers, their whole world has changed overnight, and they just didn't even see it coming, right? So data and analytics is huge, right? And the better data that you
have. Changed baseball.
It did. That is a great point. It completely changed.
Completely changed baseball. It's not even the same game.
Oh, what was that? What was that movie? Moneyball, right?
Moneyball.
Oh my gosh. That is a great example. Johnny Lightning. Johnny B. Lightning strikes again. Listen, Danny from Soho, did you hear that? Moneyball? Have you watched Moneyball? Smashers, if you haven't watched freaking times. Moneyball, you need what'd you say?
He said multiple times.
Multiple times?
Multiple times.
Multiple times. Is that a math joke? Multiple?
Huh? Okay. Multiple times.
Good. Okay, multiple times. Danny from Soho has watched Moneyball multiple times. If you work in the med device or healthcare industry and you haven't seen the movie Moneyball, you're way behind Danny from Soho because he's seen it multiple times. Yeah. So listen, data and analytics. Now, in your experience, John.
Yep.
In your experience.
Yep. Okay,
working direct corporate, working distribution, how many times, okay, really, were you ever presented over your career with hardcore data and analytics and trends that were occurring in your region or surrounding regions, competitive regions, or hot spots in the other parts of the country, and you were able to sit there and actually spend, let's say, a good half hour to an hour.
It's funny.
Reviewing the data and analytics.
It's hilarious.
And coming out with something that was productive.
So, you know, if you work in the space, you're a sales guy, right? I mean, even if you're the CEO of the company, you're still, your first job is sales. I don't care. It just is. It's a strange medical device is strange. Strange. But lucrative.
Very strange. So
at the end of the day, the data was requested from me, not shared with me. And one time I gave data, a lot of it, spent quite a bit of time sifting through, giving data. And then the data that I gave was given back to me as a gift. And then that data was used as a prerequisite to have another conversation about quota and revenue and blah, 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 market. Hilarious, right? Hilarious. I got asked one time to give basically a detailed data dump of my territory. It was a 3-state territory. They wanted everything. And, blah, 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 blah. And then they cut it up into cells and they gave it back to me. They said, all right, now let's talk about this. Why aren't you doing business here? So the answer to your question is not only have I never been given data, quantitatively, qualitatively, it doesn't matter. Never been given data that wasn't either given from me first and then regurgitated back to me in a creative way of making it seem like, oh, we know something you don't know, and you need to look at this. You need to look at this differently. Give me a break. I mean, there's thousands.
Isn't that nuts? I mean, we're talking about companies that are worth hundreds of millions of dollars, market caps in the billions, right? And there is not a when you were in the NFL, when you played in the NFL, you guys had data. You reviewed data, right?
I think someone reviewed data, but you got to remember, I'm old, you know? Right. So like back when I played, it wasn't
as big. I don't think the ball was out yet.
Think of it this way. When I got into college, we practiced three times a day for like 5 weeks. Training camp was like a month and a half long, and we practiced in pads three times a day, sun up to sun. I mean, no. So when I started, there was no data. The data was, you better have 200 guys in training camp because you're only going to have 100 guys when you're done. Right? And when I got to the NFL, no, there was no data. If there was data, we wouldn't have been practicing the way we would have been practicing, because somebody would have said, we have a really exorbitantly high amount of concussions going on.
You know, it's right? So funny because that's how these companies run. Right.
Correct.
They were just like that.
We used to joke in the parlor, right? The people running the company were nowhere near the administrative office, nowhere near the leadership offices. We used to joke that it was gum and duct tape. Right. Hey, why are you guys so successful? And you're like, oh, because we had this great product launch, and our salespeople are the best people. And then we kind of look at each other and wink, and it's like gum and duct tape. They're both sticky. They're both sticky. So there's the chance.
That's funny. So I mean, look, you know, it really is kind of a lean in, you know, work hard kind of mantra. Right. That is there, but really no data and analytics, and things are changing. Right. So, you know, right now, right, if you go into your own bank account, there's data and analytics that are provided to you by your bank account. Right. If you use online banking,
yep.
Right.
Yep.
If you look at any major sport, they're constantly reviewing data and analytics. E-trade, right. You trade stocks online. You're looking at constant data.
But by the way, we have to stop the podcast right now because the market's gone down 140 points since we started. Somebody's paying attention and they don't like this. We got to stop talking.
We need to do something. So the reality is, you know, why do some of these companies do better than others, and what can probably make a difference, right? Is really diving deep on the data and the analytics and getting that out to your people on the front line and giving them the ability to have a fighting chance, right? And I think some of these companies, these bigger companies internally, they're innie, like you were saying, they do it a little bit better than others. And then some of these smaller companies, they don't have the bandwidth to really do it, but they should. They need to spend some time. Human resources management needs to look for a few people that are really good at the data analytics, or I'm going to go one step further. Okay. And this is the last one on my list that we'll cover from what you gave, John. I added one. Okay.
Okay.
And that's operations.
There you go.
Right. So inventory management, right. And then tech for ops. Okay. I call it tech for ops. So tech to improve or increase your operations, right? And I think you know where I'm going with this.
Amen. Right?
Is if you have a good ERP system, if you have a good enterprise resource planning solution, or you have a good ability to have a good customer relationship management software, right? You are able now to quantify, right? Both quantitatively and qualitatively, right? How you're performing, right? And you can now look at that. And guess what? These younger salespeople, right? They love that stuff, right? Because now you're giving
them the juice.
That's the juice. You're giving them a specific directive and pointing them in a direction, and they're responding. So look, I could talk about this for days. I mean, what do you think, John? I mean, do you think
to put a bow on it, this is what I'd say. I'd say that the reason there's been success up until this point has been people, but not because the companies are run well, because people find a way to overcome the obstacles that are placed in front of them. The companies that figure out how to clear the obstacles with those good people to really, really put air, to put wind in their sails, to lift them up, to just get the junk out of their way. And that's technology. Okay.
Right.
The companies that do that in the next 10, 20 years, they're going to be the company that, that own the space. Now I will tell you that the technology is at a point where it's been expensive, but that's changing rapidly. These technologies that could clear the obstacles, clear the clutter from these great people that run these companies and that work for these companies is getting cheaper. It's more available. It's, and it's there. And it's the ones that decide to create the best environment internally are going to have the most success externally. The Right. Innie for the Audi.
You've got to invest in those data and analytical tools and the internal tech for your ops in order to be successful. I'm a strong believer in that. Look, the Biden administration, you know, they just passed the bill that they're going to invest $250 billion. And for the first time, the United States is really going to invest in infrastructure on, you know, semiconductor chips and making our own technology and not being so reliant on, you know, third parties, outside parties to do that. And I think that we can all take a page out of that book and apply that here. And look, I mean, you know, in the past, these they've done well, human resource management. They've been able to find people like John saying that that are very highly analytical or OCD about themselves, and they bring that to the table, and then they help improve, you know, the environment and the sphere around them. But it's getting to a point now where we don't necessarily have that luxury anymore to find that kind of talent. We've really got to look internally and what the culpability and the accountability is of the organization to look at the data and analytical tools and then improve from there. And I think if we can do that successfully, okay, I think if these companies could do that successfully, they can run leaner, right? They could be more efficient, right? They can increase their bottom line significantly, right? Improve efficiencies when it comes to operations, right? Have better people and better intel on board, right? And then overall, they're going to improve. And listen, now with this data and analytics, they're advertising and marketing better to their customers because they're actually listening to the feedback that they're getting, which is the proof's in the pudding, right? The proof's in the numbers, the proof's in the outcomes and the feedback that they're getting from their field. So listen, John, you got anything you want to say to wrap this up?
Just thanks for listening. Thanks for being part of the Smashers group, man. And these are good conversations to have. I truly enjoy it.
These are. And Smashers, look, we got to talk more about this stuff. We got to bring this stuff out into the street. We got to bring it to the light, and we got to talk more about the things that, you know, the itchy, scratchy subjects. So data and analytics, we got to invest more money, you know, in tech for ops. So I don't really want to talk about that. Let's just talk about doing more sales. Or let's just talk about, you know, the new widget and this and that. I get it. That's some of the fun stuff, but you really got to get nitty gritty and down into it and say, hey, look, you know, we need some internal capability. We need to improve the Innie in order to improve the Audi. Right? Like John's saying. So look, we just want to thank you guys for listening. We want to thank you for your social media likes, your feedback that you're giving us, right? Again, email us, check us out on, we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of them. Also, we're on podcast-wise, we're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Buzzsprout, Deezer, and a slew of others. And we are looking forward to hearing back from you. Stay tuned. Okay, to the next few shows, because we're going to have some great guests, and there's going to be some excellent feedback on how we could be more serious about saving healthcare. And Smashers, listen, we love you guys. That's it. We're out. And think differently, people. Talk to you soon. If you like today's show, then join the mission. Become a fellow Smasher. We're passionate about saving healthcare. Subscribe, like, share. Tell your friends. Together, we can make a difference. Go to smashithealthcare.com. This show was brought to you and sponsored by Omedza.com.